This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Richard Jakes, and it's really great to have a chance to talk with you. Looking forward to diving in and finding out about your soundtrack for Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy.
Thank you very much for having me, Kate. It's a pleasure to be here.
And the score is absolutely epic, and I suppose it kind of has to be because it's about superheroes, right? So, I mean, yeah. Right out of the gate, I'm really curious about, you worked on so many different projects and really different games and films, and I'm wondering if there's anything special or unique that you feel a soundtrack for a game with superheroes, what kind of things does that have to have?
It's a really good question. I mean, you hit the nail on the head saying that it's this sort of epic proportion, because superhero games and movies, they have to sound, in my opinion, sort of a bit otherworldly anyway, because, you know, we're dealing with good versus evil, etc., superheroism. You know, I always want a score like this to sound like it's on huge epic proportions, just like the characters are themselves. And for my opinion, the sort of perfect recipe, I would say, is very strong themes for characters or villains, but also an emotional backbone to the score. So there are always going to be some more poignant moments and maybe some darker moments. So a bit of a variety, so that when the big heroic themes kick in, you really get that elevated sense of sort of empowerment.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, unlike other characters like in Mass Effect, which you also scored, or James Bond, who are mortal, you know, superheroes, nothing's hard for them. So it must give you a lot of scope to just really go big with the themes for them.
Yeah, it really does, because, you know, superheroes always have different abilities and powers and things like that. So you're able to score things that would never happen in real life. So you can experiment and you can go big and you can sort of accentuate these amazing powers that these amazing characters have. So it gives you a lot of opportunity to really sort of key into that and also work with the story as well and sort of tell the story through the score as well.
Well, this game, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, has been in development with Eidos Montreal for quite a few years, and so I'm wondering how early in the process you were brought in.
Well, I was contacted by Steve Shapkowski, who's the senior audio director at Eidos Montreal, back in 2017, when they were looking for a composer, and Steve had heard some of my scores from primarily James Bond, Bloodstone and Mass Effect, and was thinking that I would be a good fit for this project, and a couple of people had recommended me. So it was way back in the summer of 2017 that I actually started writing a few pieces of music to get some ideas together, specifically the main theme for the game, which we call the hero theme, which is the sort of Guardians main theme, and a few other pieces of underscore. And then I sort of started full-time on the project towards the end of 2018. So yes, it's a very long project with a huge amount of music, nearly 6 hours of music, and we were wanting to work with the game team to sort of make any necessary changes and things like that, try some ideas out. So yeah, it's probably a good 2.5-3 years, but it's been a great great fun ride from beginning to end.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, did you have any idea when you were just getting started that you would end up with a 6-hour score?
No, I had no idea. We both thought that it would be probably about 2 hours of music that was needed, but with games like this, as they grow in development, they grow in size and scale. And there's so many characters in this game. You know, Marvel has this incredible 80-year history of all these amazing characters. So as more characters were introduced, it was apparent that we needed to have a lot more music. And also, music plays a really big part in these kind of games, in superhero games, because they support, the score supports the narrative from beginning to end. So there's a lot of music in the game. So yeah, it was a great opportunity to weave the score in and out of the game and accentuate narrative moments and battles and more poignant moments. Yeah, fantastic opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are more games about superheroes and obviously films too. And so I'm wondering if you drew on any of those soundtracks to help you develop the sound that you ended up with.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of kind of action soundtracks anyway. I have been since I was a kid, and I always notice the music in an action adventure movie or a game. And I think it's sort of crept into my DNA over the years, really. And out some of the projects I've worked on, I think you can hear that's what really excites me about the projects I'm doing, scoring that kind of adrenaline-filled action-adventure scores. For this particular project, I obviously know a lot of the superhero movies and games. There wasn't any one particular that I drew any inspiration from, but I knew from the beginning that I wanted to use a full orchestra and choir and electronic elements. So that was the first sort of few things that popped into my head about how I was going to attack this project.
Yeah, well, so once you kind of decided who was going to be in the band with the orchestra, what kind of ideas did you and the team at Eidos kind of kick around for, you know, what the sound should be or what the music should sound like?
Well, we knew it had to be kind of epic sounding from the beginning. So when I was writing some of the early material, I would write some of the main themes that we were going to use throughout the game. So as I mentioned, the main hero thing for the Guardians, for example, and that's full orchestra. And then there's a couple of characters in the game, which I won't give any spoilers about, but they're very strong, powerful female character. And we utilize the choir quite a lot, using not only sung words, but also some choral effects. And it really gives this sort of powerful yet mysterious kind of feeling when this character is appearing in the game. So we were trying out lots of experiments of how we were going to tie the music to the narrative and to the characters to make sure it had a sufficient weight so that when the gamer is playing through the game and the characters come on, you know, we're using a lot of themes to represent those. So it was a question of sort of trying those out from the beginning, and then we had a clear roadmap of how we were going to fill in the rest of it.
You know, I'm so curious about how you would get started with a project like this. I mean, I would imagine staring into this abyss of knowing that you've got to get this score done and you've got a blank screen or a blank page. I mean, what kind of things do you do to get started?
First of all, it's really important to try and understand the story and the scope of the gameplay. With this particular project, there's so many characters in the game that was, I wouldn't say it was difficult, but I had to focus really heavily right from the beginning. Who's this person? How do they fit into the story? Where do they appear? And of course, I was scoring one scene and I was looking for this character thinking it was a human male character. And of course, it's Cosmo the space dog that speaks Russian. So things like that, I was kind of having to get used to expecting the unexpected in a way. Yeah, at the beginning, we were sort of looking at the scope of the game and where we were going to focus music heavy and also where we're going to go light on the music and focus on the sound design and how the narrative evolves throughout the game so that we could get in our minds having a shape of where the high points in the narrative were, where the more poignant moments are. And that gave us a clear roadmap from the beginning of how we were going to score each chapter of the game and each point in the narrative.
You've mentioned themes. And so when you hit on the main theme, I mean, what makes a main theme good in your, or you know, what something that you can work with?
That is an excellent question. I suppose it's personal to every composer. To me, it has to be memorable but not too repetitive. It has to have shape. So for example, this theme, I was sort of imagining partly the Guardians traveling through the galaxy in their spaceship, but also when they're sort of bantering and arguing with each other and also having a sense of togetherness. So those were my kind of key takeaway elements that I wanted to include in the theme. But yeah, having a really strong melody, having a sense of perpetual motion that the theme is going somewhere, and also having a flexible theme that you can reuse elements of that theme in the more emotional settings or the more poignant settings. That's also really important. So those are the sort of elements I wanted to include in it. And it has to be exciting and interesting, and it has to give the player or the listener a real sense of, you know, superhero empowerment that they are experiencing this superhero power.
Yeah, so no pressure. I mean, just, you know.
Yeah, it can be a bit daunting, but when I'm creating a main theme, funnily enough, and most composers have their own way of doing things, I normally do it completely away from my studio, and I don't have any equipment or instruments in front of me. It's usually when I'm just sort of taking a walk, and it usually comes in my head first rather than sitting at the keyboard or the guitar. That's how I like to do it. And then I scribble a few notes down onto paper or onto my phone. And I feel that's a very kind of liberating experience where you can just kind of play around with these melodies in your head and then you can realize them in the studio later. And I find that works every time for me. And that's how I always work on big themes.
Thank you. there's like a real tradition of that too. I just found out that when Bartok was staying in upstate New York, his son took him out on a canoe ride, and Bela fished a bunch of manuscript paper out of his pocket, and instead of, you know, looking at the scenery on the lake, he was like scribbling down melodies and stuff.
Wow. That doesn't surprise me.
It's very cool that, you know, nature can do that, or just taking time away from staring at a screen.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in the modern era, when technology does play a big important role in a soundtrack, especially in video games, it's really good to get out into nature. And I always just find it, you know, as I said, very liberating. I can just hear melodies in my head that I wouldn't necessarily hear in the studio, sort of in front of the screens, and almost forcing myself for something amazing to come out. You know, when I was doing the James Bond game, that theme, I was actually on a bus when that theme came to me, and I just literally scribbled it down. I was commuting and traveling somewhere. And yeah, I was thinking about it. And again, I didn't have any technology in front of me, so I scribbled it down, and that became the main thing for that game as well.
That's so cool. That's a little more, I don't know, discreet than whipping out your phone and humming into it. Because on a bus, that would get you some looks.
I know some composers do that. I find it, I've got a sort of shorthand method of notation that probably other people use as well, but I can scribble it down, and then I can look at it visually and think, oh, maybe just change that note and get a slightly better shape and feel, and it just kind of evolves from there, really. But the initial sort of seed of the thing is always when I'm kind of walking around or doing something different away from the studio, maybe cleaning the house or something. It sounds very unglamorous, but I think it's important to just free your mind when you work on something like that.
Oh, for sure. And especially with a project like this where you have more than the main theme, although you mentioned that you didn't want it to turn into a kind of a Peter and the Wolf sort of thing with a different theme for every character. So how did you like limit that?
That's a really good point. With a game like this, where there are lots of characters, both heroes and villains, I think personally it's important to limit yourself to around sort of 3 to 5 themes. And by that, I mean main sort of themes. You know, there's motifs that I use throughout the score. For example, when you're traveling in the Milano, and you're, you know, there's a few others that I would just call motifs. But themes itself, we actually looked at all the characters in the story, and we thought, right, that person needs a main theme, that person needs a main theme, and of course the Guardians do. So there's probably 3 or 4 main, you know, big themes in the game. But like you said quite rightly, you know, in the setting of Peter and Wolf, that is purposefully done for the characters. Whereas if we did that, it would have been a bit overkill and probably quite confusing, actually. You know, we could have gone down the rabbit hole and actually scored every single character, but I think it wouldn't have had the gravitas that it hopefully does, because it would have been diluting each character's theme in a way. So, yeah, Guardians theme, 2 main villain themes, and some motifs as well, and that seems to have worked very well.
Yeah, because as I've been listening to the soundtrack, and thank you for the preview, by the way,
you're welcome.
It's been really interesting to hear how you weave the themes in, but it's very subtle. I mean, it just, and I know with the visuals too, it's going to be great. It's going to be a great fit because you're not like clubbing players over the head with, oh yeah, here's this character's theme again.
Yeah, that's really important to do, and I think it's probably quite easy to fall into that trap. But there's no kind of, I don't exactly have a counter saying, well, I've used it that many times, I'd better not use it again. It's sort of natural instinct of where it's valid, where it fits, but where it doesn't, it's therefore not needed. So it is quite subtle, you're right. And I think you know, when you see it with the game and some of the cinematic sequences as well, it will make a lot of sense of why I've placed fragments of the theme in these specific sequences. It could be something to do with the story, it could be something to do with what's happening on screen, and I'm not giving anything away, but it's used sparingly at times, but in the right way to provide the right function, I think is the best analogy of that.
you had the added challenge of working with all the licensed music too. And I mean, it helps. It sounds like you're a real fan of a lot of the music that they used. And so what were some of the challenges of making that kind of dovetail?
Well, you're right. We've got in the game, we've got 30 licensed music tracks, huge hits from the 80s. And we also have the Star-Lord Band, which is original, 11 original rock songs created by the audio director, Steve Shakowski, and his writing partner, Yaron Boudreau. And so having these different elements, I was, you know, conscious from the beginning that it had to be a seamless experience. We didn't want it to sound jarring when the player is going between, for example, exploration and combat, and in combat is where some of the licensed music tracks come in. So actually I took great care to dovetail coming out, for example, coming out of a piece of licensed music and then going into a piece of the score. I actually echoed some part of the melody from the licensed track as we go into a cinematic sequence. So I keep it in the same musical key and tempo, and it's very subtle, but there's one song that plays in a particular level, which is Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears. And as that fades out and the strings come in, there's a little French horn solo, which just almost echoes the first three notes of the chorus of that song. So, you know, we took great care to make it musically very seamless, and so that the story would flow very seamlessly.
I think that's just so cool. And it really speaks to how carefully this game has been made, that these really specific moments are scored so very carefully, rather than just letting the game engine choose the music and giving it, you know, a set of parameters, and then it just pulls from the engine. Yeah.
I mean, having so much music, I mean, I don't know how many hours there is if you include all the licensed tracks and the Star-Lord band tracks, but there's probably nearly 8 hours if you include all the licensed music. And it would have been very easy just to, as you said, select all the licensed music tracks, have the game engine pick it at random or in a specific playlist order. But they're actually chosen very, very carefully. The lyrics and the title of each licensed song are chosen very, very carefully, depending on where you are in the story and where you are in the game. So I take my hat off to Steve, the senior audio director, for doing that, because it really makes a difference in the game. So again, no spoilers, but just look at the title of each song and where you are in the story. And there's almost like a sort of hidden message there as well. So yeah, the team really took great care on this game, and I've been very, very impressed with everyone's dedication, especially during various lockdowns and COVID. So yeah, very impressive.
Yeah, it's amazing how many, and Eidos is a phenomenal studio anyway. I mean, I love their games, but it's just, it's incredible. I was talking with my son last night, and he's been talking about how astonishing it is that all these studios have been able to pull together and make these games with nobody in the studio at the same time.
It really is impressive. I mean, when the pandemic hit last year, I think a lot of people just thought or assumed that we would have, you know, a huge time extension and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think we had an extra 6 weeks and that was it. But I've been very impressed by everyone on the team sort of working out of their apartments or their houses, or kids running around, homeschooling going on, all these kind of things. For myself, I couldn't get to my main studio for about 3 months last year. So I was actually working in a spare bedroom in my house where I've got a very basic studio set up. It's nothing like I have in my main studio. And it was funny because a lot of people, a lot of my friends and colleagues were saying, well, how are you dealing with the sort of isolation? And I said, well, I've been a composer for 27 years, and I've been isolating for all that time, because you just sit in a room on your own, often without windows, all day, all night, writing music. So it actually came quite naturally to me. But obviously the social aspect of being able to sort of have a bit of downtime was a bit challenging. So I literally just worked all through it. But yeah, the team did an amazing job with coping with that as well. And I think they've really risen to the challenge.
Yeah. Well, how did you get the soundtrack recorded? I mean, how did you get that orchestra into Abbey Road in the middle of all of this?
It was very difficult because, going back to March 2020, when we were all in lockdown, that was actually the time I was looking to secure the dates. And I'd already had some dates on hold at the studio for, I think it was April of this year. But then all the studios were shut completely, worldwide, I believe. So there was a lot of Zoom calls going on, thinking, how on earth are we going to do this? So I secured the final 11 days for June this year for the recording dates. They were secured back in April of last year in 2020. But then with all the social distancing, we couldn't physically fit the size of orchestra that I wanted, which was a large one, in the studio at the same time whilst keeping everyone safe. So I was having a lot of, you know, challenging conversations with the recording engineer, with my mixing engineer, about how we could pull it off, because, you know, it was a lot of unknowns at this time. Were the studios going to be open? What were the social distancing measures, et cetera, et cetera? So we actually ended up recording the brass, the strings and the choir separately in the same room, but at different times, so that we could have the most amount of bodies in the same room without breaking any COVID rules. And then we sort of glued it together in the mix stage, which is not the ideal way to do it, but actually this is the only option we had. And I was confident that my mix engineer would be able to deal with that. And he surely did. And I'm absolutely thrilled with the results. And I don't think anyone would notice necessarily that we had to do it in a slightly unusual way because of COVID.
Yeah, no, I didn't notice at all. I mean, it sounds like they're all...
Fantastic.
It sounds like they were all in the same session at the same time. And do you have a rough idea of how many musicians ended up playing on the soundtrack? I mean, how big was the orchestra?
In total amount of musicians, including choir and a few other instruments, probably about 85, something like that.
That's pretty good size.
Yeah, it's pretty, I maybe a bit more than that with the choir, probably 85 to 90, because the choir, we would normally have 30 to 40 voices, but again, because of COVID, we had 16, which we then recorded twice and double tracks so that it gave the sound of a 32 voice choir. So little tricks like that. So if everyone was counted, it's probably nearer 90.
Are you a conductor as well, or were you in the control room listening to the whole thing?
I have been known to conduct the odd score, but I definitely would not class myself as a conductor. I was in the control room, and I'd prefer to be, because that's when I have to sort of put my producer hat on as well and making sure the recordings are coming together as I envisage them. So we were lucky to work with Alan Wilson, who's a conductor I've worked with many times, who lives actually very close to me, who's conducted many games and many movie soundtracks. And he actually conducted my James Bond soundtrack as well. So Alan's a very good, media conductor, and I was in very good hands with him. But no, I leave that to the professionals.
Well, it must be nice to have that, like, the pane of glass in between, so that if anything, it gives you a sense of a little bit of distance, I guess, because you have to be ultimately, the main critic. So,
yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm sort of listening in very minute detail. I'm very fortunate because a lot of the musicians, especially the brass players, because I'm a trombone player originally, so I've known a lot of the brass players in London for many years. Throughout the time when I was studying. And these are such incredible musicians, and they've, many of them have played on all the big Marvel movies, so we had exactly the same kind of players. So having that distance where I'm in the control room and I'm just listening very, very accurately, it's also quite helpful in case there may be a wrong note in the parts and the brass players want to throw something at me. So that it works on both levels.
I had a conversation recently with a composer, and he said, it's actually really tough to listen to the first pass with the orchestra of your music, because it's so easy to just get blown away because here's a whole orchestra playing something you wrote. So.
Yeah, that's true. I'd agree with that. I mean, especially when you've been on a project for a long time with so much music, that feeling of the first cue of the day being recorded, I don't think that feeling ever goes. And I've done this process many, many times. There's something absolutely magical about that. And I would completely agree with the composer who said that, where, you often choose a fairly easy cue to record at the beginning of the recording session, but even that would just sound incredible with these amazing musicians. It could be the most simple piece of music and the most straightforward, but it still sounds absolutely incredible with these amazing musicians playing it.
Wow. I'm really curious about, if films are very often shot out of sequence, and I don't know if that was true with this game too, or if, you must have had a sense of the whole story right off the bat, or at least, the bare bones. But I'm wondering if, as you got material from Eidos, if it was out of order, if there were any challenges with that.
Yes, that's a very common practice in game development as well. And this game was no exception, where I had the overall story outlined from the beginning. So I knew what was coming up and how it would play through sequentially. But there were parts of the game that may become available sooner than others. They may be more advanced, or they may be taking more time on a particular level or a particular chapter. So yes, I would score it. I think the first four chapters I scored in a linear fashion, in order, and then between chapters 5 and chapters 11, it was all kind of slightly more jumbled up and jumping around between chapters, and then the last four, I think, were scored sequentially. So that's something as a composer you have to get used to doing, because it is very commonplace, like you said, in movies and in games. And as long as you know where you are in the story, where you are in the whole game, which section am I doing this week? Oh, we're going to be focusing on this section. Okay, how does that fit in with what's come before, what's coming after, etc.? And it's also the same approach when working on a piece of dialogue. In this game, there are lots of conversations which have different options the player may take. So I have to basically draw a huge flowchart on paper, and so that I can see what's coming before, what's coming after, and so that the music flows completely seamlessly.
That is so fascinating. And yeah, dialogue trees are so cool. I mean, I first encountered them with, in Mass Effect, but then also in the two Deus Ex games from Eidos.
Yeah.
So what kind of accommodation do you have to make in the music to cover all of the, the possibilities?
Well, I'm probably my own worst enemy, because I like to score, as long as we've got the time and the budget, I like to score every branch uniquely, because there's going to be a different mood depending on what the narrative choices are selected. Which means that you could have a 1 minute, 30 second conversation, but there could be 6 minutes of music that makes up that, depending on which branches the player takes. And it was quite funny when starting this project, because Eidos Montreal said to me, have you had experience with this? And I said, well, yes, when we were working on Mass Effect, that was, I don't know if it was the first one, but it was one of the first games to have that kind of system with that many choices, and they executed it so well. So I was very used to what was about to come right to me to score this project. It is important to look at what's happening in the story, because there could be a start point to the conversation and an end point, but in the middle there could be 6 or 12 options, and then they reconverge at the end. So each of those individual options that takes place in the middle of a piece of dialogue could have a completely different mood or feeling. Therefore, I never take a one-size-fits-all approach, because one option might be heroic, one might be emotional, one might be comedic. You just have to look at the script and make sure you're scoring the appropriate emotion.
So do you take basically the same piece then and just kind of, make variations on it?
To a certain degree. I mean, in this game, we always start and end with the same piece of music. So before you get into the individual choices for the dialogue options, there's always a sort of intro and an outro, if you like. And then I would score based on, I still look at it as one scene, if you like, one complete scene. But let's say the 16 bars that play during dialogue option one, they're going to be different to option 2 and 3 and 4, et cetera, et cetera. But they're based around the same musical and harmonic structure, but they would change slightly, again, depending on the mood and the emotion of the scene.
Wow. So no wonder you had to write 6 hours of music.
Yeah, it was a lot. I mean, sometimes I would have kind of 8 or 10 pages of printer paper just sellotaped together on the floor of my studio with huge arrows everywhere, and that was the easiest way for me to visualize it, because the script was useful for another aspect of it, but actually being able to see the options and where they converge was a really, really important part. So yeah, there was lots of paper and lots of marker pens used during this project.
Wow. So writing cutscenes must have felt a little bit like a vacation then, because everything is kind of like nailed down, right?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, the cinematic sequences in the game use the game engine. And what I love about the level of detail that Eidos Montreal took was that when you go into a cinematic sequence, again, it's completely seamless and the camera work's absolutely superb. And I really enjoy scoring cinematics as well. So having, I think there's the 2 or 3 hours worth of cinematics in the game, or possibly more. But having those to work with is a joy for a composer, because you know you have a really important moment or a really important camera shot or something happening in deep space. And yeah, it really gave me a lot of creative freedom to, again, to work with some of the themes when they were necessary, or just to create a mood to underscore what was happening in the cinematic sequences.
Are there any that you can talk about without spoilers, or should we just kind of tiptoe around that?
Let's think. I think it would be unwise for me to mention any in particular, because there are so many, and I think they're the kind of sequences that the player would really, really get a sense of fulfillment when they actually see them for the first time. So I think I'll just leave it there, if I'm ready.
Sure, that's fine. What are some of the things that made this a different project from others that you've worked on?
I think firstly, the sheer scope of it. I mean, 6 hours of music is a lot for one person to do. And I know there are some games that have, you know, 7 hours, maybe more, which have two or three composers and various people. So that was very different to me. It's over double the amount of music I've written for any one game before. I think the longevity of the project as well, having... I was brought on board quite near the beginning, which is very, very good practice. You know, I was grateful that I was brought on quite early rather than just having a mad rush to the end. I think also having so many characters in one game was really, really interesting. And, you know, I had to think, like we were talking earlier, about how I utilize themes for some but not for others, and just having to get my head around where they all fit into the overall story. It was an epic. It's an epic sound, but it's an epic proportion project as well. I think is the best takeaway from this game.
Wow! Yeah, it's just, and it really shows. And I'd love to know, you know, what were some of the highlights for you working on this?
Let's think. All of them, basically. I think there's one section of the game where you are walking in a kind of marketplace, and we did a lot of diegetic music for that. So there's lots of kind of alien techno that you might hear coming from the various market stalls and bars. That was a lot of fun to write. Writing the main theme and working with that was a huge amount of fun. And I really enjoyed working with the choir on this project, because we were doing a lot of things that you wouldn't necessarily hear in a soundtrack. I mean, we've got a lot of traditional choir, but then a lot of choral effects that are quite unusual, and they just bring another dimension to these characters and these themes. So that was another really big highlight. I mean, it was just such a fun project to score. right from beginning to end, the whole thing is one gigantic highlight, really.
That's so cool. Well, and now the soundtrack is out, and that's just so awesome that they're releasing the soundtrack at the same time as the game. So that must be just really satisfying for you to have it just out there right away.
Yeah, I cannot tell you. It's really, really exciting to have it out there because with so much music, it was actually very difficult to choose how we were going to put the soundtrack together, right? Because, you know, you can't have a six-hour soundtrack. So we thought, well, we'll do a two-hour digital version of the soundtrack, which is basically a double album. So it took me literally about 4 weeks solid just editing everything together, choosing the right cues for the soundtrack album. And the way I approach it, and also with other projects as well, you know, you want to give the person listening to the soundtrack a sort of, if they have played the game, you want to give them a reminder of these very strong narrative points in the story so that they can almost follow that experience through. And if they're not a gamer and they just want to listen to the music, to give it the right amount of shape so that it's a journey in itself, just a musical journey. So we're kind of trying to please both audiences. And yeah, I'm really excited about, you know, that people can hear it after such a long time working on it. I'm really, really excited.
Well, it's phenomenal to listen to, and I know it's going to be great in the game. And Richard, it's been so much fun to talk with you, so thank you so much.
Okay, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.